How best to make an economy truly productive whilst generating the best possible outcomes for its citizens? It's a question to which centuries of classical economic theory have been devoted, but the debate is far from over. Many development organisations are showing a renewed interest in the phenomenon of what is known as structural transformation. On the face of it, pinning down lessons from a process which is both ongoing and never-ending in economies across the world appears a tall order. How much can we really discover about the ability of governments and businesses to intervene in markets in ways which produce consequences which are both intended and positive? Luckily, a new collaboration between the UK Department for International Development and the European Social Research Council has not been deterred from attempts to find out. The EGRP, as it is known, is a growth research programme which focuses on how low-income countries can develop their financial sectors, increase agricultural productivity, and drive innovation. This month, they got together a group of leading global experts to look more closely at what we know for sure about structural transformation. I spoke with Yarendra Basnet of ODI and Francis Malangu of the African Centre for Economic Transformation, which works closely on structural transformation issues, to find out more about what was discussed. I began by asking Yarendra whether we think governments really can be successful at structuring their own economies.
I think the governments can be successful at structurally transforming their economy. It is a traditional or a long historical question. What we have in development history, or if you mean experiences of countries, there have been countries that have gone from being poor, low-income countries to middle-income countries or high-income countries. There have been lots of policies as to how those governments have done it. One of the things that I guess we have to take into account is that there are no one set model that you can follow. So I think I'd be quite cautious as to proposing that any given country, a low-income country, can follow the set blueprint of another successful country, because each one has to find their own path. Individually, it matters because the skills that you have is a reflection on what you can earn and how you can earn. But so does the social and physical infrastructure around you, because those are the things that you require to produce goods or services. So if you just have skills and not the social and physical infrastructure, those skills do not mean much. And one perfect example that I recently used, in fact, yesterday, was in the 70s and 80s, there were lots of doctors being educated in the UK, and they went back to Nepal to work after they had gained the education. But they left the country after a couple of years being there because the hospitals didn't have the infrastructure. So they had the skills, but they didn't have the infrastructure to use those skills.
Francis agrees that there are good examples out there.
In Nigeria, in the state of the Lagos state, they have a very, very dynamic governor there who is being touted for making tremendous changes using this model that we just mentioned. One example is back in the days when you visit Lagos, the capital of Nigeria, the traffic was just huge. So he fostered collaboration with private sector and public sector by instituting a bus sort of system that will allow actually people, instead of driving their own cars to work, to use this rapid bus system to allow them to get to work on time and, in a sense, beat the traffic. This was huge. I don't know the exact numbers, but he has, in fact, helped reduce the time people spend on traffic, and really was very transformative. And it was mostly because of some public-private collaboration that he, as the state, helped sort of foster.
But examples of successful transformational intervention at the hands of the state are not limited to Africa. According to Yarendra, Nepal provides another example, but it also teaches us to watch out for the politics attached to change, or lack of it.
Nepal exists between two manufacturing giants, and we have convinced ourselves that Nepal can never manufacture, and that we must look for ways to develop bypassing manufacturing. There is a shoe manufacturer in Nepal, and he's one of the largest employers in the country, exports 80% of his production to India, which is a highly competitive market. Most of his resources are imported. The labor is the only big input into the production. The real importance of it is that low-income countries can go into manufacturing. The lesson that we derive from that story is that you have to choose right what level of manufacturing you want to be included. Here, the manufacturer has targeted the bottom of the pyramid in India, which is just endless, and wants to now enter into Bangladesh. But we talked about lots of issues. For example, he feels that policy is isolating the shoe industries because policy elites do not think that Nepal can manufacture, for instance. So he's not placed in the policy priority. Energy is a massive issue. You're saying that the cost of energy has risen almost three or four folds. But again, the policy people, they don't want to deal with that because they think that that there's no scope for manufacturing. But the real story behind it is that the income of a person who comes out from a rural area into his company earns three, four more times income than he, she would have been in the farm. And by opening a single factory, he's able to employ 500 to 1,000 people. And you will not get that scale by setting up a hotel, for instance. This is just direct employment. You know, you get indirect employment generation as well.
So these are ways in which structural transformation can occur. What do we know about how to measure it? Francis took the time to explain the African Centre for Economic Transformation's five-step process that can lead to transformation. It's all about growth plus depth. D-E-P-T-H.
D means a more diversified economy. So in other words, economies shouldn't just grow, but economies should also diversify the products that they are producing. The E, which is export competitiveness, is this argument that not only we need to export more, but we need to do it in a way that is competitive. In other words, to be competitive out there, you need to export at lower cost. So we need to address this issue of the cost of exporting to the world. Productivity, not just in the manufacturing sector, but also in agricultural sector. This is the P here. We need to be more productive. In other words, producing more using less and less resources. In agriculture, for example, when you look at the yield, which is tons per hectare on cereal yield, when you compare it to other countries, even other Asian countries, the gap is huge. So we need to close that gap compared to the potentials of the continent. The third one is technology. We need to use more technology. Of course, what technology does is it allows you to, in fact, produce more at lower cost. But technological uptake in the continent is very low. So we need more uptaking, we need more upgrading in the continent for, in fact, this growth to be deeper. And last, there is a human factor into this. One of them is, of course, GDP per capita, which measures very broad measure of income per person. But there is also employment. People need jobs, but not just any regular jobs. We need jobs that are productive, and that are formal, and that are important.
Of course, where governments intervene, there's likely to be a cost to the public purse. In low-income countries, such interventions may well be financed by aid. So does aid have a role in promoting structural transformation? Francis is somewhat skeptical.
Aid is very tricky. I've never seen a beggar becoming rich by begging. That's one personal view of mine. Yesterday, Nick Lee from DFID was discussing about the growth that African countries have experienced. And one of his arguments is that drivers of this growth is mostly minerals and aid, which is not good. So in other words, you know, his argument was that there's one would question the sustainability of this growth. You know, aid is good, but we need to target it. We need to target it to elements that can be transformative. In other words, this argument about export competitiveness. How can aid can be used to improve the competitiveness of African countries in regards to export? African manufacturing companies or producers have issues with credits or getting access to cheaper, low-cost credits. How can aid be used to enhance that? So these are really areas where aid can be useful, but that's what I'm saying. It has to be very, very careful, targeted to specific areas that can be helpful. But in my opinion, aid by itself is not the solution or the ingredient for transformation.
Yurendra, though, disagrees.
Aid has a massive role to play here. And I think the first level is because in low-income countries, especially where you have structural economic transformation hasn't really taken off in many places, you tend to see that aid is a massive part of government's national expenditure. It almost accounts to 30-40%. And so they have a policy weight. So what the donors think are important does have an implication on what the country places as being important. So if the donors or the global agenda itself does not change and give structural economic transformation and issues around it space, then it never comes up into the forefront. I would not say that the donors need to be policy prescriptive. What needs to happen is for the donors also to ask these questions as to when you do, for instance, a skills development or when you provide certain assistance. How does it map into the overall issue of the economy structurally transforming? So it needs to have some sort of a vetting or a benchmark where you are constantly taking your specific support and linking it to the broader picture. Because at the end of the day, what donors will do will be time-bound and time-specific, whereas the economy needs to power on for a longer period.